Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls California Election Special. The midterms are next week, and in order for Democrats to win the House, they need to flip 24 Republican seats. Here in California, where Hillary Clinton won 4 million more votes than Donald Trump, it is a crucial state for Democrats. Democrats are targeting 10 Republican-held districts, and analysts say they probably will not take back control of the House without winning at least a few of those seats in California. So what are the most competitive races? Who are the candidates and what do they stand for? Today, we're joined by Brian Anderson, a political reporter with the Sacramento Bee, producer of the Daily Capitol Alert newsletter, and host of California Nation, the Bee's political podcast. Brian Anderson joins us on the line from the Bee's Capitol Bureau in Sacramento. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
It's great to have you, and congratulations on your new job at the Sacramento Bee.
Oh, yes, going 5 months strong now. It's settling in nicely here.
Well, you're doing great work. Thank you for joining us. We're also joined today by Ben Christopher. Ben is covering the election season for Cal Matters. And before that, he was writing about the economy and the budget. And Ben joins us on the line from Berkeley. Hi, Ben. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you back. I want to ask both of you before we start, we've noticed that in the national media, some reports say in order for the Democrats to win back the House, they have to flip 24 seats. Some say 25 seats. Do you know, Brian, is it 24 or 25?
Well, I've heard 23 from some people.
Okay.
Maybe I'm not helping your cause there, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I believe it's 23.
Is it 23? Okay, thank you. Because
yeah.
The New York Times had, I think, 24 or 25. Anyway, great, 23. Okay, so California is now getting national attention. Rolling Stone is writing about House races. MSNBC had a segment about it last night. Ben, why has California become a prime strategy for Democrats next week?
Yeah, it's kind of an unusual feeling for Californians, I imagine, to have the rest of the country actually care about how we vote. Usually we are just sort of written off as a big blue state. But there are a number of districts here. Republicans hold 14 seats across the state, congressional seats across the state, and seven of them, the majority of voters voted for Hillary Clinton. So I think there's the feeling that there's a lot of pickup opportunities here across the state. There's also a feeling that I think there are a lot of these traditional Republican strongholds, particularly in Orange County and North San Diego County, that that they've been Republican for decades. But these are sort of the types of Republicans who I think a lot of certainly Democrats hope are turned off by President Donald Trump's particular brand of Republicanism. These are sort of the more affluent, more well-educated districts that suddenly look a little bit more competitive, and that's certainly what the polls are telling us. There are also, there's a broader story about demographic trends in California with sort of a falling white non-Latino population, and that also bodes well for Democrats and certainly turning up in a lot of those districts as well.
Brian, you wrote a recent piece called SoCal Ground Zero for Midterms. What would you add? How did California become a ground zero for the midterms?
Well, I would say it's really SoCal. There's two we're kind of following in Northern California in districts 4 and 10. But if you really look at the competitiveness, it's all in Los Angeles County, North San Diego, and Orange County. That's really the heart of it. And if the question is how did we get to this point, you really have to go off of what Ben said with demographic changes. You can't really stress how important and rapid it's really been down there, especially with a lot of minority voters, particularly in Congressional District 39, which could be the biggest toss-up race. You're seeing a lot of Asian and Latino voters there. And one major theme I've seen across all of these races is an importance for young voters to turn out. So I think those are going to be some of the themes we explore and a little bit of how California got to where we are today.
It's been really great to see so many young people running, people of color, women, LGBT. What is it like in California? Because I noticed that the majority of the Republicans who hold these seats, they're not very diverse. They're mostly white men, just based on the names that I'm looking at, and we can talk about that later in the show. But who's actually, do we see a diverse group of candidates running against the Republicans, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly there is a lot more diversity of all kinds, ethnically, in terms of gender, in terms of political experience. I mean, just to talk about the 39th district, which Brian just mentioned, this is sort of North Orange County, East LA County, the corner of San Bernardino County. And that's a really interesting example of this, where, you know, this is a district that has been represented by Ed Royce, who is a Republican, and as you point out, is an older white guy. And the two people who are hoping to replace him, one is a Democrat named Gil Cisneros, who's a Latino man, and the Republican is Young Kim, who's a Korean. And that actually really speaks to, I think, a broader change across the state. And, you know, that district in particular is really interesting because it's one-third non-white Latino, one-third Latino, one-third Asian or Asian American. And so it's kind of interesting that, you know, no matter who wins, Democrat or Republican, that district will no longer be, it will be represented by a person of color. And I think, you know, to your broader question, I think you do see a lot more diversity. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but you have a lot of women running, certainly this year, and you know, a lot of people who are new to electoral politics generally, which is kind of interesting as well.
Mm. And let's talk a little bit more about this race. It's always interesting to learn specifically about the candidates and where they stand, because I love that there's attention on women and people of color, but I feel like we need more information about the issues. So CalMatters has a great voter guide, as you do every year. And Ben, in this voter guide, you write that, let's see, Young Kim, who is the Republican running, is a former assemblywoman and Ed Royce's chosen successor. That's the congressman who was first elected back in 92. Let's see. She's highlighting her career of public service. And then Gil Cisneros is a lottery winner turned education philanthropist. You report that he's got a lot of...
$266 million.
Wow. $166 million. That's amazing. A 260, wow. Okay, so when you say education philanthropist, that could go many ways. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so
Ben,
he runs a...
Do you want to take that
yeah,
one?
Sure. So he, my understanding is he runs a nonprofit that sort of helps students of color get into college or learn about college. He also, I believe he has a master's in, I want to say, public policy or public administration, I think, from Harvard around education. This is all something that he did after he won the lottery. Prior to that, he was, I think, working for a food distributor. But, you know, I will say on the policy issues, that race, and I think this is probably true in a lot of these races, you know, Young Kim is a Republican who I think has done her best to talk as little about Donald Trump as possible, which is sort of a trend that you see across the state. And Gil Cisneros, I mean, they certainly differ on policy issues in lots of ways that you respect, but in a lot of ways, the focal point of the campaign and campaigns across the state is sort of a referendum on the president. And you actually see that in the polling, that those districts that are most favorable to Democrats tend to be the districts where President Trump is least popular. And so, and I think that's generally the case in most midterms after a presidential election, that voters are sort of responding to the person in the White House. And so that's really, as President Trump tends to do in all kinds of ways, it's sort of eating up all the oxygen, I think.
Right. And anything to add on this race, Brian?
Yeah, there's just a few things. I actually visited Orange County, spent 48 hours there last week, and we're having a podcast coming out tomorrow, actually. It's called California Nation, and that's going to go more in depth into this race and several others. And I actually got to go and see door knocking activities in District 39 with Mr. Cisneros' campaign volunteers. But going back to one point of diversity, I wanted to just stress that it's not just racial diversity that is important or gender diversity. There's also tremendous diversity in thought within this district. And we tend to categorize Asians and Latinos as this sort of one single monolithic entity, which is not necessarily the case. I went to La Habra, which is a town of about 60,000 people, 60% Latino population, and I was talking there with a voter who was going to vote for Kim, who is Hispanic, because he cares about abortion and he's a single issue voter. There was another woman who I spoke with who also was leaning towards the middle somewhere. She was undecided. She voted for Cisneros in the primaries, but had seen some attack ads sponsored by Paul Ryan's PAC for the Republican Party and had some concerns. So there's tremendous diversity of thought. And maybe nationally, we're not seeing as much diversity racially for Republicans and in terms of gender, but we have Mimi Walters in District 45. We have Diane Harkey in District 49 and Young Kim in 39, who are three females running on the Republican ticket. And I think it's just important as we talk about this conversation to not forget that in California, there's a lot of different gender diversity. But when you talk to voters in District 39, there's a lot of diversity in thought as well.
Yeah, I think it's such a great point. That's one of my complaints about some of the coverage of these candidates that are running. It's great, again, but I mean, I was listening to, I think it was an Hour podcast a couple weeks ago about a few candidates of color. I didn't learn anything about their views until about 35 in. It was just all about what they look like, the truck they're driving, and what they're eating. And I thought, okay, I love that women and people of color are running, but they don't all think the same and they don't all have the same views. So it's so important, diversity of thought. Since you brought up the 45th district, let's talk about Mimi Walters, a U.S. representative, and Katie Porter, who's the Democrat running, a consumer protection attorney. So these are two women running against each other. Ben, what can you tell us about this district and Katie Porter and Mimi Walters?
Sure. So this district is, if not the most well-educated and affluent districts, it's certainly one of the most well-educated and affluent districts in the state. It's a very Tony area around UC Irvine. And in fact, Katie Porter, the Democrat who's trying to take on Mimi Walters, she is a law professor at UC Irvine. She is kind of known as, she's been categorized as sort of the protege of Elizabeth Warren. I don't know if that's overstating things, but she worked or studied under Elizabeth Warren when she was at Harvard, and sort of comes out of that tradition of sort of consumer-oriented, you know, consumer rights and that kind of thing. She was considered the more progressive candidate in the primary, for sure. And in the last few months since the end of the primary, she's taken some flack from the left because she came out against the recent increase in the gas tax, which was passed last year by the state legislature and is on the ballot on Prop 6. So that's sort of been in dispute there. Mimi Walters, she's a Republican, and she's kind of a fundraising powerhouse in the House, partly because her district is so well off. And, you know, she's actually, incidentally, on the subject of the gas tax, she has been one of the biggest funders behind Proposition 6, which, again, would repeal a recent increase in the gas tax. And so that's been you know, an issue that Republicans have been trying to make that an issue in that race. What else can I say? So, you know, I'd say, again, not to repeat myself, but as in with the 39th race, I think, Katie Porter is hoping to make this as much as possible a referendum on the president, who is not particularly popular even among some Republicans in that district, whereas, Mimi Walters has spent a lot of time talking about how about the recent federal tax legislation and trying to tout the benefits of that.
And Brian, what would you add about this district and these candidates?
I would try and add some historical context. Where Walters won the district in 2016 by 17 percentage points, so that's a large, sizable margin of victory. The fact that we're even talking about this race and the fact that we're talking about people like Dana Rohrabacher and Duncan Hunter, who won by as same or even larger margins, is something that cannot be stressed as important enough. And I interviewed the Orange County Republican chair, Fred Whitaker, and he told me that the idea that this seat with Walters is competitive is, quote, mostly made up by the media. But if you look at credible polling, that shows Democrats with a slight edge or in a statistical tie it seems to tell a different story. And I tried to interview Porter, but she wasn't available. And surprisingly, I did get Mimi Walters to talk to me at a gas tax rally on Wednesday of last week. And she made this race, like Ben was saying, a referendum on Trump. She's casting this as, if we lose the House as Republicans, we're going to go back to the old Obama-era ways of high regulation, high and heavy taxes, and we can't have that. So for Walters, it's really about putting this seat in a national context to try and mobilize your base. And I would like to note, too, I went to UC Irvine, and I talked to 15 college students there. And take a guess how many of them said they were voting.
Oh, no. I'm afraid. You talked to 15? You talked to 15?
15 college students at UC Irvine.
Five?
All 15.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
And
okay.
Every single one of them. And I went to Cal State Fullerton, and there it was like 13 out of 14 or something along those lines. So we're seeing a lot of young voter enthusiasm this year. Even though there's a little bit of a lack of awareness as to who their congressional representatives are. But I'm 22, and I was a recent college graduate and sort of taken aback by 15 for 15 and talking to people saying they're registered to vote. I think that's something that's worth adding to the conversation about District 45.
Well, that's great, Brian, because the Washington Post had a pretty depressing piece recently. They interviewed a number of college students who are not voting. And then I think it was Al Jazeera or one of the video streamers like Now This. And there were a bunch of college students waiting for a bus. And the interviewer walked up and said, "Hey, who's voting?" And no one raised their hand. I mean, but again, this just goes back to the need for civics classes from junior high all the way through college. So people can realize that their thoughts and they actually have power if they go vote and get involved in an issue they care about.
I mean, to be fair to the Post and some of the counter narratives you're seeing about young people not voting, young people are not filing mail-in ballots as early as other generations. So we don't really have a lot of reliable data at this point showing enthusiasm or a lack thereof one way or the other. So it is still anecdotal and early to say, but I think it's interesting to note some of the enthusiasm I observed on the ground.
Well,
yeah, and
that's
we've already
great.
Saw and that. Just to jump in.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
We did see during the primary, which, you know, generally midterm primaries are pretty dismal. In 2014, the last one was, you know, I believe a record low for turnout. This year, we had the highest midterm primary turnout since, what was it, 1998, I believe? And so clearly there's a lot of enthusiasm up there.
Yeah, and early voting is huge. And I was just thinking about the Parkland students. The Miami Herald reports that youth voter registration went up 41% in Florida after Parkland students started their Get Out the Vote campaign. So that's fantastic. Let's just hope that a lot of young people vote. Today, it's our Your Call California election special, and we are talking about competitive House races. California is getting national attention. Democrats are targeting 14 Republican-held seats. 10 are considered competitive. A number of analysts say that the Democrats probably won't take control of the House without winning at least a few of those seats here in California. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, Brian Anderson is a political reporter with the Sacramento Bee, producer of the Daily Capitol Alert newsletter, and host of California Nation, the Bee's political podcast. And Ben Christopher is covering the election season for Cal Matters. They also do great reporting on California politics. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Most of these races are in Southern California, but it's always good to know what's going on in Southern California. This is such a massive state, and there's some competitive races happening. Things can really change next week. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's hear from Susan in San Francisco. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. If Kamala Harris was running, I was unable to find her name on the ballot. Is she running? I know she's campaigning down in Southern California with Gavin Newsom. But I want to know if she's running and where she's hidden on the ballot, if she is running.
No, she's not. So she was elected Senate in 2016, and they served for 6 years. So she won't be on the ballot until 2022.
Well, what about Feinstein? She's running, and wasn't she elected at the same time?
Who?
Dianne Feinstein.
She's running this year, this time around. She'll be on your ballot.
I'm confused. Okay.
That's okay.
Thank you.
All right, I hope that helps. Thank you.
I think maybe I could clarify one point for that. That might help.
Sure.
So in the House of Representatives, they run every 2 years. So you see the exact same people showing up on your ballot at every cycle. With the U.S. Senate, it's every 6 years. But it's not every 6 years for all senators across the country. Only about a third of them go every 2 years. So that's the confusion maybe that she's seeing there.
And maybe another source of confusion might be the fact that you are seeing Senator Harris on the campaign trail a lot, because she's
very true.
Well, for a number of reasons. I mean, partly because she's a big name and she's very popular among Democrats, certainly, and so she's probably a good way to sort of draw attention to these down ballot races. And also, you know, there's a lot of speculation that she's going to be running for president soon, so you may have seen her in Iowa, a random state that she's visiting. And so that's, if you're seeing a lot of Kamala Harris in the news, that's probably why.
Right. Well, I hope that helps, Susan. So this time around, Dianne Feinstein and Kevin DeLeon will be on your ballot. We spoke with Kevin DeLeon actually last Wednesday. Dianne Feinstein did not get back to us with interview requests, and you can find that interview with Kevin DeLeon at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And in about 10 minutes, we will speak with the League of Women Voters, Carol Moon Goldberg, and take your question, last-minute questions about voting, about what's happening at the polls, or if you have any questions about measures. All right, so we talked about two races. What other races are you closely following, Brian?
We have, there's 11 competitive races in California for the House, according to the Cook Political Report. Of those 11, there seem to be 8 that we're looking at more closely, which are 4, 10, 25, 39, 45, 48, 49, and 50. The main thing you need to know, 2 are Northern California, 6 are Southern California. And of those 8 races, the general pattern that we're seeing is a lot of focus on some of these new figures who haven't been heard before, such as Mike Levin in District 49 competing in an open seat against Diane Harkey. That's the likeliest seat to go to the Democrats, if you talk to any expert. And District 39 is another open seat between Gil Cisneros and Young Kim. So these open seat races seem to be very tight. But the interesting thing to note as well is you have places like District 50 in San Diego County with Duncan Hunter, who won the 2016 election by 27 percentage points. And that's the largest margin of victory for any person who's in a contested competitive race right now.
Let's talk about Duncan Hunter's seat. You just reminded me of an article I read in the New York Times back in August called Duncan Hunter's Political Promise Foiled by Hard Partying and a Corruption Scandal. Duncan Hunter was a fixture on the bar scene, according to the New York Times, and spent lavishly over $400 for 30 tequila shots at a bachelor party. He visited one of his bars sometimes multiple times a day, piling up thousands of dollars in tabs. And on occasion, he'd get into loud arguments with patrons, once over the choice of music on a jukebox. A lot of articles about Duncan Hunter and how he spends his money. Well, what is the update on this? Ben, do you want to take that one? Are you following this?
Sure, yeah. So I am following this one. This is a really interesting race in the same way that a car accident is really interesting. It's kind of hard to take your eyes off of it. So, I mean, as Brian said, this is one of the most blood-red Republican districts in the state. It's the sort of area around San Diego and San Diego County for the most part. And, President Trump won this district by 15 percentage points. And so this would seem to be it's kind of astonishing that this is considered a even remotely competitive race, except that Duncan Hunter, the congressman down there, Duncan Hunter Jr., he's the son of a previous congressman, he was indicted for campaign finance violations. He was not just buying, 30 tequila shots at a bar, but he was using, it seems like, campaign, or allegedly, he was using campaign cash to do that. He was using it, allegedly, again, to, go on family vacations, to buy clothing, to in one case, fly his pet rabbit across the country. And so he is under federal indictment now, and so it's very possible that even if he was to win this election, he might have to step down in the near term. We'll see. He's said that he won't. And so I think this is kind of a pretty interesting test case of how strong partisanship is for voters in California, or at least in that corner of California, whether voters are going to be willing to vote for someone because he's a Republican, he's on their, he has the right letter next to his name on the ballot, despite the fact that he's facing all these legal trouble. And on the other side, he is running against a man named Omar Campanajar, who is 29 years old. He's like ridiculously good looking, and he's a millennial, and he's very progressive. But he also, he's of mixed Mexican and Palestinian descent. And Duncan Hunter and a lot of his allies have made a big issue of that, particularly because Campanajar's grandfather was sort of a high profile terrorist organizer from Palestine. And despite the fact that Campanajar has never met his grandfather and had a security clearance when he's working for the Obama administration, a lot of Duncan Hunter attack ads have made a big deal of that in ways that I think are fair to say are slightly Islamophobic. So,
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. Is this based on fact, or is, because we're seeing a lot of really nasty ads going out about immigrants, about the Middle East. So is this a factual statement, or is this
there
a lie?
There's several different claims that are made, some erroneous ones that I won't bother to repeat. But there are some old familial ties in the Najjar family to what could be considered an act of terror. But, I mean, it has nothing to do with this particular candidate. And I don't feel comfortable trying to repeat some of Hunter's comments, but it's clear that he is going after the Trump base and trying to, at least in part, use some fear tactics in order to get votes.
Well, the San Diego Union-Tribune has endorsed Omar Campanajar for this seat. What is his platform? What are some of his top issues?
For me or for Ben?
Brian.
So I think that one issue that is central for all Democrats that's been repeated by Najjar is healthcare. That's really what you see as a strong common theme going into this election, where California Democrats are suggesting that if Republicans hold the House, you could see pre-existing conditions stripped away from people. And that's very popular, even among moderates, independents, and several Republicans. So that's something that they're playing to as a whole. So I'd say for Najjar, healthcare is certainly up there as an issue, because if you're campaigning in a traditional Republican stronghold, you want to try and find some of those more popular issues that all people could agree on.
Yeah. And I think, for obvious reasons, he's also making a strong sort of anti-corruption case, a broad, clean up Washington, D.C. kind of argument, just because, again, his opponent in the race is under federal indictment.
Brian, since you've spoken with so many voters, have you spoken with voters in this district? Are they concerned about this indictment against Duncan Hunter?
That is a great question, and one I am not qualified to answer. we spent 48 hours in Orange County, and we did not go to San Diego, so I didn't have an opportunity to speak with voters in that district. So maybe Ben would be more qualified on this question to take that than me.
Sadly, not really. I haven't been down to that district either. But I will say that if you look at the polls, Duncan Hunter is still ahead, but it's a lot closer than you would think it would be. So clearly, some voters are feeling uncomfortable about the legal issues that their congressman is currently facing, I think it's fair to say. Mm.
And what I will add...
Oh, go ahead.
Just on that point, there's been a lot of mixed polling, and I think we tend to cite polls very often in our reporting and in our conversations about elections in general. And it's important to note where those polls are coming from. And there's a lot of partisan polls out there, especially in District 50, that I'd warn people against. And we're seeing a lot of mixed polling and limited polling in many of these districts. So that's just one point to make sure you're not reading too heavily into some of these polls.
Yeah, and I also feel like in many cases it prevents people from voting because they might think, well, my person's not going to win anyway, so why vote? And we definitely don't want that. And I will say, CalMatters, this, what you've all put together is fantastic, because if you go over to the District 50 page, you see the district, the map, and then you learn more about the candidates. But underneath, there's just so many great articles about how the media are covering these candidates, from the New York Times to the LA Times and local papers. This is really great. And according to a number of media outlets, I mean, Duncan Hunter, like so many Republicans, in one piece he said, it's, quote, in the Middle Eastern culture to lie. So, I mean, once again, we're just seeing some pretty ugly and racist things being said in these campaigns. Today we're joined by Ben Christopher. He's covering the election season for CalMatters, and Brian Anderson, a political reporter with the Sacramento Bee. We are talking about House races in California. There are 11 that are competitive, and analysts say that Democrats, in order to take back the House, they have to win at least a few seats in California. So we're talking about some of the more competitive seats. And let's hear from Jonathan in Corte Madera. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I would be interested in hearing sort of on-the-ground kind of thoughts about the race in the 10th District. Josh Harder versus Jeff Denham, and I live in Corte Madera in the Bay Area, and my son and I actually went and canvassed there, and reminding people that that's a very competitive race that's near enough that we can we can influence, you know. So I just wanted to speak to that and hear what you guys had to say about it.
And Jonathan, can I ask you, since you went there to canvass, what was your experience like? What did you hear from voters?
It was a mixed bag. It was we got the thumbs up. You know, we're all in. We had a surprising number of people who said they've already voted and indicated they voted for Harder. But then there were people who closed the doors. There were people. Most people were willing to engage. I would say, you know, it's funny that the probably the biggest complaint was correlating Josh Harder with the devil. Nancy Pelosi, and people hear that, you know, that's just like it for some voters, propaganda sort of has been effective for a lot of Republican voters, and so those are some of the things that we experience.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. So this is District 10. This is the closest swing district to the Bay Area. This includes Modesto, Turlock, Tracy, Manteca, another strangely drawn district. This is another thing that's great about the CalMatters voter guide, because you can see how these districts are drawn, and they're just, we've done so many shows about gerrymandering, but this district is another strange one. So why don't we start off with you, Brian? What can you tell us about this race?
Sure. Well, first, that's a very great question to be talking about District 10. Is we don't have too many races in Northern California that are really competitive, but this certainly is up there as perhaps the most competitive in Northern California. So to the San Francisco audience, it's certainly one that should be getting some more eyeballs. As far as the competitiveness of it goes, it's very neck and neck right now. We've seen some polls from UC Berkeley and Sierra College / New York Times that have Harder in the lead. But it's still largely neck and neck and within the margin of error, so at a statistical tie. This has been a traditional GOP-leaning area, and it does appear that Harder's message is getting out to voters, and he has somewhat of a narrow lead at this point.
And what would you add, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that what we just heard from the caller is a familiar story for me, at least anecdotally. I don't know the data, but certainly, especially on the weekends, you kind of have an exodus of Bay Area liberals heading over the hills, over to Tracy, and to get out the the vote. I would say that this district is interesting in the way that a lot of Central Valley districts are, where they tend to elect voters there tend to elect Republicans, but where Democrats, registered Democrats, actually outnumber registered Republicans. And so I think from a Democratic perspective, the hope is that this year, for various reasons, and probably number one reason being President Trump, that turnout among Democrats will be a lot higher.
The Sacramento Bee points out that Denham has proved to be a loyal foot soldier for Trump. He votes 97.8% of the time to further Trump's agenda, a far higher percentage than many for Republicans. So this guy is very conservative. What can you tell us about the differences between these two candidates? What really stands out, Brian? I mean, specifically when we're talking about health care, women's rights, tax cuts, is it pretty obvious? Are they on opposite sides of the spectrum?
Well, I think it's clear that they are very different candidates, to put it mildly. Like you said, Denham votes with Trump more than 97% of the time. And that is something to note, that I'm sure Josh Harder will not vote for Trump 97% of the time. So there's a clear, distinct difference. As far as issues go, I do see a lot of differences in terms of health care. Both, I believe, have stated that they're in favor of pre-existing conditions, but you hear that a lot right now with Republicans trying to message that way. So as far as differences by issues, you can look towards the environment, you could look towards healthcare, you could look towards education, and almost anything you could probably spot a difference. But what I would say is this is a race where voters will have a choice to go in two very different directions.
Okay. I was just going to add to that. I mean, I guess one area where Congressman Denham has tried to mark himself as a somewhat more moderate position is on the issue of immigration. And that's not surprising, given that his district has quite a few number of immigrants and also, frankly, farmers who rely on labor from a lot of immigrants. On a lot of other issues, I mean, he voted for the federal tax legislation. He voted to repeal Obamacare, and I believe he also voted to strip sanctuary state and sanctuary city jurisdictions of federal funding. So he's a very consistent Republican partisan, I suppose.
Yeah, it's so interesting that Republicans now say that they support pre-existing conditions. So basically that healthcare providers would have to give insurance to people with pre-existing conditions. Whereas, a couple of years ago, they wanted to get rid of all of it. But what happens when the people have a taste of something that is just common sense and then they want it, including Republicans, all of a sudden the Republicans now support pre-existing conditions. Are you hearing that from many of these California Republicans, Brian?
Oh, yes. Dana Rohrabacher, he in District 48, is a prime example. There's an ad from, I believe, October 4th or 5th. He tweeted out, and it had a bad retweet to reply ratio, like 150 retweets, 1,000 plus replies. And he is on a surfboard walking across the beach and saying that he supports pre-existing conditions. And I interviewed Democrat Harley Ruda, who was quick to point out that he voted against pre-existing conditions on multiple occasions. So regardless of the facts, you certainly do see a lot of high-profile Republicans, even the most Trump-loyal Congress members, really going and saying, oh, I've always been in favor of pre-existing conditions.
Well, and President Trump himself tweeted that this morning, that if you elect Republicans, they will be better on this issue.
Jeez. Just wait until we have universal health care. Imagine how the opinions on that are going to change. Brian Anderson is a political reporter with the Sacramento Bee, producer of the daily Capitol Alert newsletter, and host of California Nation, the Bee's political podcast. Brian, thank you for your work, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good talking to you.
You too. Thank you. And Ben Christopher is covering the election season for Cal Matters. Ben, thank you for joining us. And again, please thank all of your colleagues for all the great work that you've done. Well, this election and past elections, but I just love the way that you put your website together. It's so clear and it's just full of information. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I'll pass that along.
All right. Thank you. For the last couple of weeks, we have been doing a lot of shows about the election, about the propositions, about tight races. We had on Kevin DeLeon last week. We talked about the governor's race, another important race in the East Bay, Buffy Wicks and Jovanka Beckles. We also had them on. You can find all of those shows at yourcallradio.org. And now I would like to welcome the League of Women Voters board member, Carol Moon Goldberg, to the show. She is voter service director and oversees and coordinates the League's Easy Voter Guide and the pros and cons of statewide ballot measures. And the League of Women Voters teamed up with MapLight to create Voters Edge, which is one of the best polling guides that's out there right now. We've been talking about this a lot over the last couple months. You type in your zip code and your entire ballot will come up. And what I love about it is when you look at the propositions, not only do you learn what they would do if you vote yes or no, in very clear terms, but they also follow the money, which is so, so important because hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent on propositions. Hi, Carol. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, it's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting us.
Well, it's great to have you. I just want to say thank you for the Voters Edge because this is amazing. We have used it so many times on our election shows. Are you getting a lot of traffic on this website?
Yeah, we are. And as the election day comes closer and closer, the numbers will go up, probably starting on Saturday. I think all websites related to voting guides and things related to the elections will really start to peak because that's when people finally say, oh, I have to vote by Tuesday. And so
right.
Saturday they'll start saying, okay, time to research. So we're ready for them.
Well, good. Thank you. And if you want to check that site out, it's votersedge.org/CA. And you can also find it at yourcallradio.org. Before we talk about a few issues, Carol, what are you hearing from voters? Is anyone having problems? Is there any information you want to get out to voters?
I think that I haven't been hearing about problems. We are fortunate to live in California. I think that in the five counties that have the Voters Choice Act, where they've shifted from polling places to vote centers and drop boxes, there have been a lot of questions about that. San Mateo County is one of those counties, Sacramento County. I think those are the two biggest counties that have made this shift. And so as with any change, I think people are a little confused about that. And so we are getting calls about that mostly.
And what are the major changes?
The changes are in those five counties, every registered voter gets a vote by mail ballot. They should have gotten one by October 9th or 10th at the latest. And they are given the option to either mail in the ballot, like you would with any vote by mail, or drop it off in a number of secure voter drop-off places. They can be in libraries. There's a whole list. When a voter gets the information in the ballot, they are also given a list of places where they can drop the ballots off. And in that case, they would fill out the ballot, put it in that pink envelope, sign the outside of the ballot, always sign the outside of that pink envelope, and take it to a secure drop box where you get to put it in. And those are taken every day back to the registrar's office. The other aspect of it is a move towards vote centers rather than polling places. And vote centers are sort of mini county elections offices. So if you spill coffee on your ballot, you can go get a new one at a vote center. Or if you accidentally mark something you didn't mean to, you can go get a different ballot. You have to surrender the existing ballot in order to get a new one. So they are full-service vote centers. Some of them are open as many as 11 days before the election. I know in Sacramento they opened last Saturday. And others are open for the 4 days before the election. And they are scattered across the counties in places where people are passing by them. Could be maybe shopping centers or it could be, what do you call them, assisted living facilities, places where there is room and where a whole computer system can be set up. So the voter can go in, get their business done, including voting, or register to vote, even if they've missed the date to register to vote. They can go to one of these voting centers and register to vote that day and cash a conditional ballot. And that's something new, actually, for the first time in California, that's finally possible to do. So it's quite different from going down to your neighbor's garage where all you can do is cast your ballot and then leave. So vote centers are designed to be full service.
So interesting. So this new law passed in 2016, the California's Voter Choice Act, is the argument behind it that it'll bring out more people to vote, that we'll actually have more people voting?
It's my understanding that it is hoped that that will happen. Also, primarily that it is more convenient for people, because we don't work those 9-to-5 jobs anymore where you actually have time to run down to the polls before you go to work, or you have time after work, because people aren't working those kinds of schedules anymore. And the feeling is that this is more efficient and this fits more with our modern lifestyle.
So this is Madera, Napa, Nevada, Sacramento, and San Mateo County. So if you have friends or family in any of these counties, please share this information with them. The Secretary of State's website has a great video and information about this. Carol, do you know, eventually, is the goal for this to be implemented in every California county?
I believe counties have the option to adopt that, and they expect to see more as time goes on. I don't know that there is any pressure on counties to do that. I think the hope is that people will see this, like it, use it, and that will encourage adoption of this statewide.
And again, you can find information about this, the Voters' Choice Act, at yourcallradio.org. Is there anything else that voters need to know?
If you're mailing your ballot, be sure that you mail it and postmark it, that it's got a postmark of Election Day at the latest. It will be counted so long as it's received in the elections office by 3 days after the election. And if you are voting by mail, be sure to sign the outside of that pink envelope, because that's the signature they look at, that's the signature they compare, and if there's no signature there, then the county's probably going to have to contact you and figure out what to do from there. So it's important to sign it.
Some people are also confused about stamps on that envelope. How many do you need?
That can vary based on how long the ballot is. And the best thing to do would be contact your county elections office to determine that for sure.
Okay, or maybe just throw a few extra stamps on it just to be safe.
Yeah, or if you got 5 stamps, stick it on, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
actually, starting in 2020, I believe that there will be no postage required anywhere in the state of California.
Good. That was going to be my next question. That's fantastic. I love the work you all do, and you're right. It's great that we live here, even though there are some problems. But when you look at what's going on in Texas and Georgia, where the machines are bringing up the name of the opposite candidate, or all of the voter suppression that's happening, and it's, you know, voters of color. We talked about this yesterday. It's just it's so horrible that there's so much voter suppression. Voting should be so simple in this country, and it's not for too many people. In some cases, they can't even vote.
You won't get an argument out of League of Women Voters on that. It has been our thought for the last 98 years of our existence that citizens should be allowed to vote, and they should do it.
Yeah, well, I hope you can listen.
States, leagues have been involved in litigation over those things in some cases, in some states.
Well, if you missed yesterday's show, I hope you can tune in. Carol Anderson wrote a book called, it's basically about voter suppression, and she says that Donald Trump would not be in the White House if it weren't for voter suppression. One person, no vote. Yes, thank you for that. We don't have much time, Carol, but is there anything that has changed in the last week that people need to know about? Have you seen massive amounts of money being poured into any races or propositions that we should know about?
Not that I have seen. As you mentioned, at the end of all of the ballot measure descriptions on Voter's Edge, a voter can take a look at the money that has come in and some of the top donors. And that's very interesting. I tend to think that, particularly in terms of TV ads and the print ads, the things that you get in the mailbox, those were all probably done and paid for a month ago or so. It'll be interesting to see if there's even more, but I've not perceived any at this point.
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't gotten much mail this time around, which is actually kind of nice for a change, but I am hearing that there are lots and lots of ads, especially when you're talking about Proposition 10, which would repeal Costa-Hawkins and allow states to implement rent control laws. And mm-hmm. those that support it have raised about $26 million, the majority coming from the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. And then the No on 10 side has raised a whopping $75 million. California Association of Realtors, Blackstone, Essex Property is at the top of the list. And I just heard on KALW News yesterday that a lot of people are being swayed on Prop 10 by television ads. And they've got a lot of money to run a lot of these.
Yeah, there have been a lot of television ads. I think, in my very unscientific review of things, that Prop 10 ads were the first political ads I saw in terms of the ballot propositions, at least in my part of the world.
The other one that's raising so much money, in fact, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, and I think the money surpassed it since then, is Prop 8, kidney dialysis clinics. Now, I've seen so many ads on this one. And Yes on 8 has raised $20 million, No on 8, $111 million, mostly healthcare dialysis companies. I mean, tons of money on Prop 8. And this one also confused some listeners.
Yeah, it is a little bit confusing because it's a this sort of rebate concept. I think is hard to understand. Essentially, what Prop 8 does is establish sort of a cap of allowable costs, the cost of providing direct patient care and quality improvements, and those two things are defined within the statute, and then clinics could make an additional 15% over that. And if they make more than that, then there's a rebate process. It's just something I think most voters have never seen before. Certainly I've never seen it before. So it is confusing. It really is.
Well, the people for say Prop 8 will stop dialysis companies from overcharging patients. And then the ads that I've seen are, you know, people who are on dialysis saying that they're going to get kicked to the curb. So it's really important to do your homework on this one to find out, you know, in many of these ads, you get a lot of misinformation. So what is the truth? Voters Edge provides a lot of really great information along with the money, who's spending, endorsers, and then some outside sources. Carol Moon Goldberg is voter service director and coordinates the League of Women Voters Easy Voter Guide. They have put together an incredible guide with MapLight called Voters Edge, and you can find it at votersedge.org/CA. With all of these elections, unfortunately, we have to follow the money. Hopefully that won't be the case one day, but there's a lot of work to do. Carol, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all the work that you and your team have done on this.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. And you can find more resources at yourcallradio.org. Please share all of the information because it can be kind of overwhelming. Again, the guide is really long. I mean, if you live in San Francisco, in addition to the props, we also have 5 local propositions. Again, that guide is votersedge.org/CA. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.